calendar here, and I have only 1 hour until I'm doing state affairs. Perhaps we could bring up Senate Bill 7 and 42, maybe either in that way or either way. Maybe holds the resolution to the bottom.
Yeah, they are the most important. I didn't anticipate that SCR 8 would take very long, unless somebody anticipates more than I do. That's why I thought we might polish out one off right quick, because the other one, I don't know if we'll even get through or not. Would you be agreeable to that, Bill?
Well, I have no objection, but I don't know what the, I haven't looked at it, and I'm...
Any preferences or differences from anybody? Maybe we can get one out if we do that, and we'll, it's going to take too long. Okay, the meeting will come to order, and the first one on the agenda is Senate Bill, Senate Resolution, Concurrent Resolution Number 8. And Bill Hall is representing Senator Tua on that particular thing. Bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senate Concurrent Resolution 8 was introduced by Senator Curtula at the request of some of his fishermen constituents. The intent of the resolution is not to put the state necessarily in the business of providing 100% refinancing for fishing vessels. The intent is to provide a mechanism whereby the public can have some input into determining what percentage of the loan can go towards refinancing. The current 50% figure established by the Department of Commerce and Economic Development represents an administrative action that was taken in regard to the legislation, which some people have felt may be inconsistent with the original intent of the legislation, which was to provide a method of financing lifting the burden on fishermen. Most fishermen had been dominated to a great extent by the processing industry in terms of financing, and the original legislation was felt to be a mechanism whereby the fishermen could be brought out from under the burden of the processing industry, under the domination of those people. So the intent of the legislation was to provide fishermen a means by which to obtain financing where it wasn't otherwise available. The banking industry at the time was not interested so much in financing commercial fishermen. The 50% refinance figure on the surface appears to be perhaps in contradiction with the original intent of the legislation. On the other hand, prudence would require that a person recognizes that maybe the state isn't financially capable of providing 100% refinancing at this time. Nevertheless, this is a mechanism to get the subject brought up whereby some discussion could be brought to bear on it, and perhaps the amount of the loan request that can go towards refinancing might be able to be increased to a figure greater than 50% but less than 100. Are there any questions in regard to...
Yeah, I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
That's right.
What does the... is there anybody here from the Department of Commerce?
Mr. Jeans, yes.
It would seem to me, really, that this would be superfluous, knowing exactly what the department can approve or disapprove of loans at their discretion. So it wouldn't make any difference if you had 100% or not. If they make the determination 50% is all they're going to do and they put it in the regulation, I would say that's indicative of what their policy determination is as far as the amount of percentage of what they're going to do, and as far as refinance loans. And there's no way you could force them to refinance or to even give a loan. That's they have the discretion to make the loans, and they are the ones that are really the ones that administer the program. So unless I am entirely wrong, even if you did pass this and they did take an unofficial position that they weren't going to refinance anything over 50%, what would you do to that? What would you say to them? You would be right in the same position you are now.
I'm not so sure, of course I can't speak for the department, but I'm not so sure if they're in opposition to this as it's written. Senator Ray's comments are, of course, valid, and I was hoping that a representative from UFA would be here to represent their position on the bill, but because they are having a meeting at the end of this month to take a, I'm sure they will be examining, and I was hoping that at that time they could determine what position they wanted to take on it and then represent that position. Senator Curtula again introduced the bill at the request of some of his constituents.
Mr. Hall, mm-hmm. I may interrupt a minute. I think Mr. Jeans, after speaking to him earlier, will probably reiterate what Senator mm-hmm. Ray has already said, and this will be referred to resources. Maybe at that time you might can have someone from the fisheries.
That would be fine. I would hope that would be possible to do.
Does anyone have any more questions for Mr. Paul? If not, thank you, Mr. Hall. And Mr. Jeans, I think we have your testimony in this matter.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'll make this brief. We've always had a limit on this commercial fishing program. To begin with, it was $5 million, then it was raised to $7 million, and it's now at $9 million, and that limit comes off in June of 77. Now, we established policy back in 72 when this program was started, and refinancing was a big thing because most of the applications that we were getting were strictly for refinancing present loans. We could have spent the total $5 million that first year just refinancing bank loans, and we didn't feel that was the intent of the program. We felt that these loan proceeds should be used for people that were having trouble getting the financing or didn't already have an existing loan. So we came up with a 50% figure, and the reasoning behind that was if a guy, say, has a boat that's worth $50,000 and the present lien was $20,000, if he needed repairs and equipment that totaled $20,000, we would split the refinance in 50-50. We would refinance the $20,000 plus let him have the money for upgrading and repairs so that we could have a first lien on the vessel, but we would not come in and just refinance to save him 1 or 2%. And we use this policy up until 76, and we just adopted the regulations in 76 and included this 50% refinance. Right now, the Department of Revenue holds $6.1 million in commercial fishing loans, and we have about $2.3 million in loans to close at this time, so we're going to be hitting would do it. I don't blame them. They're paying 10.5%. I'd come in to get 7.5% money myself. And we have tried to estimate the impact that we have on the program. We just count them. I'm sure it would be a considerable impact. And I think we're talking about a program to where we're going to go along and make between $3 to $5 million in loans a year at the rate we're going if we open this to complete.
Thank you. understand what you're saying, we involve the same people, with the same money, what are you really doing? You're just making a better bet for a certain group. You don't have enough, unless you enlarge the scope of the people who are going to get the loans, then you're really not doing what the act was originally intended.
Right. And there's a specific area in the loan business where the bank won't touch it. They won't refinance sometimes. They're certainly not easy to get money out of to refinance or overhaul a boat or do the engines and that sort of thing. And if this money is available for that sort of program, it seems to me appropriate to utilize it for that, where to buy a boat or to finance just the acquisition cost of a boat, it seems to me like if money's available at 10.5%, and it's existing, as is the case in many of this, loans are existing, it seems to me fruitless to utilize this limited budget of $9 million, is it?
Yes,
sir. $9 million.
Yes.
And
that ceiling comes off this year, though. It's
Well, there's some practical limits.
That's right.
The fact that there may be legislatively it may come off.
It could very well be another limit put on it. And here again, the Department of Revenue can at any time say they don't have the money to purchase these loans from us and stop it.
Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Boland in some of our discussions has brought up a good point. You know, what other outfit can you do this with? You can't do it with your homes. You can't do it with a home loan. You can't do it with a tourism loan. You can't do it with a veterans loan. So why should you be able to do it with a fisherman's loan? I mean, you know, hey, I've got a lot of people in the Southeast that are fishermen, and so is Senator Boland.
Senator
Boland.
As you all know, I come from a community that is strictly fishing, but years ago, it was just next to impossible to get a loan for a fishing boat. They just wouldn't even talk to you. And then the banks became a little more receptive, and they did start loaning. But we established this for those that were having trouble with the banks, not as a refinancing kind of project. And I agree with both Senator Sumner and Senator Ray that
I don't mind sending it on to resources, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks.
I would move that we put this out with individual recommendations. I don't mind at all.
I'll give it one new pass to get it there, just so that no Daniels or somebody might can justify and get it over with, if that's all right.
Well, I think really, if I might prevail upon the resources, Chairman, I think that from past experience in the Finance Committee, and when this does go open-ended, and the limit goes off, the ceiling goes off, I think it does really have financial implications, and I'll sure take a look at it up in Finance. We might want to redo the whole act.
Mr. Chairman, could we just inquire of Mr. Jeans if he knows what's the status of the $6.1 million that revenue now holds? Are those loans up to date?
Yes, it is, and that's at this time they have 240 loans, and we're running less than 2% delinquencies a month in this program. It's the best program that we've got.
Better than the
program.
It's the best one of the six.
Mr. Chairman, that's one area I think the department ought to be complimented.
The best place is Kodiak.
It definitely is.
Is that department in both the vet loans and in this program?
Of all the loan programs,
all the loan programs, yeah. It's the lowest
just through Congress
that I remember in the history.
Mr. Chairman, I have no objection to higher. Senator Ray's pass the buck
Volger.
Okay. You put that in form of motion, individual recommendations.
He did.
Senator Ray did.
Yep.
Okay. So awarded.
Darn good program, and I see what Jay's trying to do with it. Let somebody in let Jay do this.
James. J-E-A-N-S. J-E-A.
No, Phil.
Okay, let's move on to
Farmers with
selling. I hope we're to move fast here.
Thank you.
Such a tight schedule today. Thank you very much, Mr. Jeans.
Thank you,
Parker.
See you,
Paul, rather.
What do we got, number seven?
Number seven, please. And Senator Orsini has a proposal A and B.
could be somewhere from what we had initially. Take up A first.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Some of us must be heard concurrently on this, because we both have.
Sure, right.
We both have a lot of state affairs on it.
Well, we spread out.
This is the second day in a row my legislation is pending officially.
Okay, since you, but John, you want to get a little closer to that mic, you get a little closer to this one. We got you both coming. So we can compare SB 41, same amount. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, after discussions last week on Senate Bill 7 and concepts there and related to, these two alternate proposals have been devised in an effort to mitigate the financial impact on the state while still at the same time trying to help the smaller businessmen, which seem to be the main area of concern. The one proposal, I'm not sure which is A and B now, the one proposal that is the less costly one, is that A or B?
B.
B, okay. Proposal B.
B is the least costly.
Proposal B would eliminate the 1/2 percent tax and make it all 1/4% tax. Since the 1/2% is only applicable to the first 100,000 less than the initial 20,000, that would help the smaller businessman. Proposal A eliminates all taxes, tax and everything, and all incomes under $100,000, and continues the 0.25% on volumes above $100,000. Slightly more expensive, again, it helps the smaller businessman.
Mr. Chairman,
if I might finish, Mr. Chairman.
I was going to make it a lot easier for you, Joe, really.
Make a motion?
No. If I'm on your
own. Senator Aiden, you the floor.
I think this isn't going to do you any good unless you can answer the questions. I mean, at least to my satisfaction, and that question is on the inflation rate and what it does to the municipalities. Can you do that? Okay. With your due respect, seriously, would you address that? And I mean, the money part we can get into, but you understand what I'm saying about the inflation rate as it relates to the various municipalities? If you scrub that out and just leave it, when you aren't, with the inflation going up, you're not keeping pace with it. We're under the present 60% rebate with the inflation.
Revenues, whereas under if either one of these proposals passes, they will not gain as increased revenues. And that I believe is what Senator Ray was concerned about, the inflation factor. And Mr. Chairman, I acknowledge that this is in fact is something of a problem to those municipalities who may be missing some thousands of dollars that they would have otherwise gotten. On the other hand, looking at the other side of the inflation factor coin, this law, as far as I can research it, is a 1949 law. Now, since that time, the gross business, the business that had a gross income of $20,000 in 1949 probably has a, with the same level of business now, probably have a gross income of $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. That same level as it was in 1949. In that case, the inflation factor has not kept pace. In fact, the smaller and smaller businesses have been increasingly hit with this tax. So that's the other side of the inflation coin. It has not kept up with inflation over the years as far as the business is concerned. It has benefited municipalities. I think the amount that we're talking about is not that great on any one municipality, since there is the floor under which it will not go, that it becomes, in my mind at least, that much of a concern. Now, perhaps some municipalities may not feel that way, and if so, I'd be interested in hearing from them, and certainly in the next committee of referral, we will address that issue more closely. But I think that it's not that great an impact on any one municipality.
Has come into the act and saying, hey, you know, what's happening here? We're going to have to wait for grants and we're not going to be able to keep track of it. And we don't care what happened in 1949 or 1959 or 1969. What we're looking at is what's going to happen in 1979. And as such, we don't want to be bothered about it. We want to know exactly how much money we have coming, and we don't want to have to depend on anything less than 100% funding, which is what happens in grants a lot of times. We appropriate X amount of dollars and it's prorated out, and sometimes we only get 60% or 40%. And that really doesn't pay then it falls on the individual consumer or the individual taxpayer, the landowner, and that's the guy that has to pick up the slack that was left by us repealing the business license tax. So it does go back. Business are going out and buying the stuff, it's just because he has his own property someplace. Just because he lives in a community. Well, this would be now, it's got to the major problem as far as I'm concerned, and I don't know what Mr. Sharp is going to say. I suppose, did you get a copy of his letter?
Mr. Chairman, well, again, I would point out that there is a floor. They will not receive anything less than they got as a result of taxes from fiscal 76. So if they're concerned about the variability of their revenues, that's much more stable, a more stable figure than might be otherwise gleaned. In fact, I would, since we are discussing the Juneau situation, I would suggest that if the impact of the capital enhance that situation, that it would guarantee them, even if the businesses all leave, they still get that amount of money from the state. So if in fact some of the dire predictions with respect to the capital move do in fact occur, and this bill would be something that I would think that Juno would endorse rather than oppose.
That's not essentially true, Mr. Chairman. Just to speak back to that, the majority of the people living in Juno could care less about 1 million or how much we're going to get back on this if the capital moves, because we'd instantly default on all of our bonds anyway, because we just. The tax burden would be impossible. But it's a very nice thought, and it's one commendable, and it's one that you should think about. And if you feel that strong about it, then you should support the capital remaining, you know, not to move it.
It seems appropriate at this time that we might get the other side of the coin here from the attorney for the City Jura, unless Senator Huber thinks it more appropriate that he get his.
I think Joe and I can kind of go hand in hand here. I won't take as much time as Joe did, but I wanted to make a couple of observations, Mr. Chairman, if I could. It would be my suggestion that your A and B proposals which I noticed both of them pick up the last end of 41 and place it on 7. You really shouldn't have these two bills before you if legislative affairs didn't slip a cog. But sometime last November, and I don't know when Joe applied for this kind of a bill, both of us are interested in the field. I have been ever since I disliked this bill of this law and hated it so much as a businessman. Have went in business, I think, the first year that it was effective in the state of Alaska. And then I ran into local government and came up with the other side of the picture that we needed the money. And of course, the last end here was designed to take the stand of the Municipal League and the current stand, the last time I checked on it, which wasn't too long ago, of the municipalities. They just didn't want to be sure that they were getting any lower than they were getting. Gee, we wanted to keep growing, but let's all keep in mind that the purpose for putting in the EPP is the dictionary sense of the word that regressive means that it's passed on to the ultimate consumer. And you've already been into it deep enough to talk about the inflationary effects and how that is affecting it, so I won't bore you with it. I would suggest strongly, though, that you drop the idea that's in both of these bills, or both of the substitutes, under Section 1, one of them making it 0.25%, and one of it making it 0.25%, but eliminating a few professionals, some of the smaller businesses. The nuisance of it is as much as anything else. The businessmen don't like this tax. If there's a tax that is hated throughout the state by businessmen, it's this tax. If there's a part of it that is the most regressive, it's when it does apply to the supermarket. Any place where markup is low and volume is high, it hurts the consumer the worst. And I think I don't care which bill goes out. I would just assume that Senator Orsini's bill goes out. I would much prefer the tail end that comes off of Section 7 that you have on Proposal A and B, that comes off of Senate Bill 7, which is on A and B. And I think maybe the language in 7 might be, or in 41, might be a little better where it is referring, it might be better placed where it's referring to Section 30B of this chapter, meaning the banking tax. If you remember, the only tax we have on the bankers is the tax, I believe, that we apply under this section. So if you, when we tried to repeal the law, we immediately found out we were removing the little bit that the bankers do have a chance to contribute to this great state, and we didn't want to relieve them of that chance to contribute. So we just left that part in. We did try to take everything else out. And I don't think I'll bore you anymore with it. Get on to the department unless there is some question. But I really believe that we wouldn't have two bills here if legislative affairs had got Joe and I together. My first letter, which I supplied to you, was dated November 23rd, was their answer to me. So sometime in November, I asked for the bill. Joe might have asked for it in July from the number of pre-files he had, for all I know. We're both equally interested, I'm sure.
Yeah,
Mr. Chairman, in that regard, this is the bill I had filed last year and worked on. I was in the Commerce Committee for the whole session, and somebody moved out of there. And so I just pre-filed the same bill that I had.
Well, I worked from Mr. Chairman so that it might help the committee. In the House, the bill went farther. And I tried to take all of the final arrangements that were added to it and sweat out in the committees of the House and make them the starting point in Senate Bill 41. So you might look carefully where 7 and 41 differ at the bottom of page 1, the beginning of page 2, because you may find that it's been shaken out a little better, or maybe Joe's a little better. I thought that the shakedown was a little better myself.
Well, you've expressed my sentiments exactly. I've been on the paying end, and then I've seen the other side, and I've got a dilemma that I haven't been able to resolve. But as you have heard, and I've heard, there have been many complaints from small businessmen. It's the most unfair
tax. But then again, it's a great source of revenue, and if we eliminate this, it might put us more in the clutches, as the Department of Revenue said, the oil companies. And,
One more remark, Mr. Chairman.
I'm not trying to.
If you'll allow me, I forgot.
Take your disfavor.
I forgot one item.
Yes.
And that is that keeping the small 0.25% in there does keep the worst part of the bill still alive. And I'll tell you, I can't think of a way that we get closer in sharing with Alaska Inc. to all the people than getting rid of a regressive tax that hits you hardest in the supermarket where the markup is the lowest.
That's a good point.
Mr. Chairman, I think though, if we're talking about doing anything for the ultimate taxpayer at the bottom of the pile, we're not doing it. We're simply transferring the burden to another taxpayer. The cities, the municipalities have gotten used to existing with the money that comes in from this tax. And they're not going to do away with that money if they can fight their way out of it. And that money is going to come from somewhere. And I think the department perhaps used poor terminology. They should have said it would put us further into the pockets of the oil companies rather than the clutches. But that money is going to come. It's going to come from somewhere, and I think it's just purely a matter of philosophy here. I think it's a terrible tax to put it on gross business. But how do you cope with getting it back to the cities what they used to?
Senator Ray.
I can't help, maybe I have a different philosophy than some of the other members here, but it would seem to me, they talk about regressive taxes, and yet everybody likes to talk about the sales tax being the fairest tax of all.
But nobody knows.
If the sales tax is the fairest tax of all, then this is so close to a sales tax, it isn't even funny.
All business?
Because it hits everybody.
Yep, that's right.
Obviously, you and I agree that the sales tax isn't all that fair, don't we?
But Mr. Chairman, if we're waxing philosophical now, there is no such thing as a fair tax. But you're taking something out of somebody's pockets to give it to someone else.
Well, the sales tax is so patently unfair, as you have usually the ones with the biggest families and the small wage earner, who spends all of his money. He takes in $500 a month and he spends that $500 a month. And all of it is taxed at whatever the going rate is. You take somebody else that's in business, maybe somebody that's retired or has a business and has gone through that and has made their money, and they only have himself and their wife, and they eat very little, don't buy any of their clothes here, and take their vacations out and buy their cars outside and all the rest of it. They aren't paying hardly anything. So really what it comes down to, and they are the ones that could probably pay more because they have more income to pay with. And the guy that is just living from week to week on a wage or salary.
Mr. Chairman, in each of these proposals, it appears that on the basis of the testimony and the work done, and my staff has done some similar work, and it supports essentially right down the line, that a major part, by number, of the businesses in the state fall below the $100,000. A major part falls below the $20,000, I think, and a significant number below the 100,000 without it affecting the gross revenue to the state significantly. And while I could understand that nobody's going to, in a step function, remove $19 million or thereabout from the state without some severe impact and repercussions, I'd like to hear some discussion on maybe from the committee members about where they feel that maybe we ought to have the 0.25% run from whatever threshold, but it should at least be consistent, maybe 0.25%, so that the smaller of the businesses aren't taxed at 0.5% on their total business, are taxed 0.25% on the significant part of their receipts.
Good point. Well, let me say this before we go on, and I see we've got about 15 minutes or so. Our Senator Orsini and I have discussed this, and he beat me to the door, and so did Senator Huber, because I was still researching it. And that I didn't find it as good as I thought it would be initially, and I wanted to make sure it was a decent bill before I put it in. So I wanted to get on as a co-sponsor. But I do know this, that 5 years ago, 97% of all our businesses in this country were small businesses, and 52% of all the people employed were employed by small business, and it's decreased rapidly in the last 5 years. This is due to unions and controls and taxation and so on. And the small business man is just getting beat out of existence unless it's a family affair, or he's got a lot of money to pour in it, and then he doesn't need it. And I've had some small businesses, and I had other sources of income to pour in them, and I made them a success and sold them because I didn't want to. Well, I've still got a couple, but those that were a real headache, I got rid of. Because I was glad to get rid of it. It's a 24-hour job. So much for that. And if anybody doesn't have any questions, we'll call.
Is it true that the LaCosta-Noster family is the only one that's really thriving these days?
Beg your pardon?
Isn't the LaCosta-Noster family the only one that's really surviving these days?
Well, I've been better than most.
Is it my understanding, Mr. Chairman, if I could question one of the... pose a question to one of the committee members, is it the... Senator Sumner, do I hear you say that if we to perhaps raise the gross volume figure and or is that what you're saying, or
yeah, conceivably raise it to 20,000? He's got two proposals, or 100,000,
yeah,
and make it a linear 0.25% from there on up, and that doesn't significantly reduce the taxes or the income to the state. And I know it doesn't solve the initial problem where they tried to eliminate the total $19 million from business, but I think if we make a step in the right direction, maybe a compromise position of taking it off the shoulders of some of the smaller businesses, the one maybe less set up to fill out the forms and file the taxes and that sort of thing, that we could take it off of at 100,000. Let's see. Joe, maybe you can tell me if I'm right, but my figures show that from there are 9,000 businesses or something like that between 20 grand and one million. So,
between 20,000
and 1 million,
yeah.
Or maybe, yeah, from 20, right. So, if we cut it off at 20,000, we would cut 9,000 forms from being submitted, and that, if we cut it off below that, I think we lose $1 million some odd. What was your figures? $1 million something if we put that threshold at a $20,000.
Are you talking about A then?
B, I think.
Nothing under 100, no gross business, no gross income under $100,000 would be taxed.
Yeah, that would be $2 million or thereabouts, would it not? Under your on your proposal A, what's the income loss?
The income revenue loss is 128.9.
Okay, that's if the threshold is set at 100,000 and above. What is it if it's set at 20,000?
Which is proposal B, it's about $1.5 million.
Yeah. Yeah. 0.5.
Aren't we, in essence, then, aren't we taking the tax off of one area of business and just putting it on,
sure,
something else? In other words, you're taking it off of really, you're taking it off of small business men and putting it on big business, and big business has a way of being able to put the tax back on the individual rather than much more easily than small business, because small business don't have any way of doing that normally, unless they are so what are you, then we're just compounding what,
yeah.
I didn't see it. I
want to know is how we're going to have a small business, man. Right?
Yeah, pretty soon you're going to have nothing to open the big business, man. And they, you know, it's very easy for a grocery store or a big commercial outlet to sap this on the consumer. It's very easy. In luxury businesses, it doesn't really matter. I mean, hey, some of those clothing stores, 100% markup, or jewelry stores, 200% markup, whatever. Just doesn't make anything to them, you know?
Yeah,
now we're going to, and yet the biggest,
it would seem to me our big gross volume businesses throughout the state are the supermarkets, and where you're really doing this, and hell, they just add on.
Quarter of a cent to them, they pass it along as a penny.
Sometimes.
Yeah. You know, and then they're really making money on it on the tax, really, and they're
And if you listen to who squawks the loudest, you're going to find it's the guys in the supermarkets and the guys that, that really are in big business rather than the small guy, because the small guy usually don't make enough money to fool around with it.
That's not you.
Well, I was going to say that all my years in the two-way radio business where we sold pretty high-priced pieces of equipment, maybe they didn't have as high a markup on them as automobile, but they were still pretty high. This wasn't a big portion. The biggest problem to us was the fact that it was a nuisance. If you're going to, if you do amend it in the manner that's shown in the top end of A and B presentation, please make it Joe's bill that you send on and not mine, because I'd sooner mine die than to have that.
In the interest of time, before we discuss it any further, I wonder if we shouldn't have Mr. Sharp's other side. Mr. Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a couple of comments because it seems that most of the things I'm concerned with have already been raised and discussed. The municipality does see the repeal of this as something that's going to have to be replaced as a substantial part of our budget. It's equivalent of approximately a mill area wide. It's going to have to be replaced somehow. As I pointed out in a letter to you, I think it does keep pace with inflation, with economic growth. It's something that we don't have to worry about. It's going to come in, it's going to increase with our needs, our local needs. Senator Orsini has proposed a reduction in the rate, and I really don't know what the impact of that would be on the municipality, because I don't know what the loss to the state would be, so we could compute the 60%, but there, this does raise one additional legal problem, which the committee may want to look into a little further. And as I recall, there's an AG's opinion out back from the early 60s, which states that as to dedicated taxes, the dedication is destroyed if you change the tax rate either up or down. In other words, any change in the in the rate of the tax destroys the dedication. Now,
I remember that too.
So, and I believe this was came up in relation to the fish tax, business license tax, and possibly the tobacco tax, which were dedicated. But anyway, so that means if the rate is changed, the dedication technically ceases, and there would have to be an appropriation. And again, then we're faced with 100% or less funding each year. So that would, even though the there'd be something on the books that says that 60% is to be refunded, it would then become subject to appropriation and subject to something less than the full amount being appropriated. But again, I ask the committee to keep in mind the what's been brought out to it by several of the committee members, and that is that somehow the municipalities are going to have to look around for a replacement. It may very well be the sales tax, which is perhaps, and I don't want to get into a discussion of the propriety of this type of tax you're levying or repealing, but it's certainly at least as regressive as the business license tax. Property tax is probably no more progressive. And those are the two main sources, aside from grants, of course. They're the two sources that the municipality uses a great deal and has control over. It may very well have to resort to an increase in those or establishment of one of those as a substitute for the loss of revenues under the business license refund.
Senator Orsini?
Mr. Sharp, if you are concerned in that regard, and you probably wouldn't object to perhaps just changing the law to turn this taxing authority over to municipalities and let you municipalities tax as much as the state is now taxing. That would guarantee that you had that same income.
Mr. Chairman, I believe probably the municipalities already have that authority. I don't believe it's been withdrawn from them. But it's, again, all I'm saying is that someplace the revenue has to be replaced or we have to cut back on services. Now, whether it's from a local tax on precisely the same source, if that's the legislative policy, certainly the municipalities could face that one.
What's the rate?
Well, the national Senator Orsini arose no matter what you call it, so is the tax. And if you're truly interested in eliminating this burden upon the people of Alaska, then you're going to put it right back and give the municipalities the right to do it, then you aren't really achieving anything.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
you just want to be the good guy.
Yeah, we're not achieving anything anyway, as long as we're going to return that that money to the municipalities. We're going to get that money from somewhere. Right. I don't care whether it's the you-know-whos or who it is. We're going to get it from somewhere. So we're just really playing games with this.
Yeah, the only advantageous position to turning the tax back to the consumer directly, whether it's a mill tax or whatever it is at least then the business doesn't put a profit on it before before he pays it. But I won't argue that. The only thing that seems fair to me is that is to tax either a 0.25%, if we're going to have a tax, is to tax a 0.25% from start to finish, and instead of putting the high end of the tax on the lower volume dollar small business. I can tell from the sentiment around here that we're not going to eliminate $19 million, so I yielded from that position.
Both A came up, I'm going to write a thesis and send to all my business constituents.
Both A and B have the straight 0.25%. The only
right,
difference is the
that.
Threshold. One is $20,000, the other is
$100,000.
I might mention that, you know, you talk about the $19 million. The longer you stay with a tax that's bad like this, the more dependent you become upon it. As we grow and things inflate, the more dependent you will become. That's why the section is written in here that the municipalities will not be afforded less return than they get during 1976.
Senator Ray.
Then John, if the inflation rate keeps going forward, 20% or 10% or 15% over, say, in 5 years, then the municipalities in actuality lost what 15-20% of their what the increase would be. So you're really talking to the municipality, and then they in turn have to turn around under some other guise and put another tax on and make the tax collections from somebody, whether it's everybody, taxpayer, you know, whether it's property owners or sales tax, but it's still, you, and all we've done is just camouflage and eliminate something that we didn't eliminate, we just moved from one place to the other and say, now we've got a wonderful thing. Are we really doing it? If we're doing it, okay, we're doing it.
Well, we are eliminating. If we go all the way on this, we're eliminating it, Senator Ray, from the burden of the burden is being eliminated from the businessman, and we're saying, as a compromise, you, the municipality, will receive no less than you receive now.
Where do you get it?
But where do we get the tax? Where do you get the revenue?
You know, I can't help but think that it is a much better system to take some of this off of some of our profits from the permanent fund, the profits, I said, not the original amount, than it is to get it where you're getting it.
Well, they'll increase the corporate taxes, they'll increase your property taxes. You got to have a revenue unless somebody can shoot me down. I was all for this bill, and I'm saying I'm not for it now. I'm after helping the small businessman any way I can. I thought maybe we could.
Most of us that are for the bill have considered all of the pros and cons on the bill for some 10 or 12 years or more that we've worked with it. I know I worked with the Municipal League and the City of Fairbanks. As a businessman, I didn't like it. Then as a city councilman, the borough assemblyman, I had to find out what to do. And the big problem for municipalities are that municipalities only have certain legal places that they can get their money from. And when you take away a source like this without giving them a new source to get their money from, you're really hurt them.
Well, let me show my interest for what it's worth. I attended all the Eagle River Chamber of Commerce meetings, and this is one of the big things that they brought up, and that's half of my constituency. And I'm going to have to explain it some way to them if we don't get this thing through. But if it's for the good of the state, well, then we won't get it through.
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe the fair way to do this would be to increase the, and say, 2% of the gross receipts in excess of $1 billion.
Come again?
I like that.
That's what we're going to end up doing.
Is that a motion, Senator?
Mr. Chairman, you know, another way, if you don't want to have any fiscal impact or minimum fiscal impact, raise both thresholds, both the $20,000 and the $100,000 existing thresholds, and leave the percentages just the way they are. So you may raise to say $50,000 and $120,000 or some other appropriate numbers, so that the income to the state is the same. It's just that the higher brackets will pay a little bit more, and the the smaller guys will pay a little less.
What is the consensus, if I may ask at this point?
I don't know one.
In the interest of time.
I don't know one single business that has asked me to diddle with that law. Everyone asked to repeal it.
Yeah.
And the municipalities said, reimburse us for the money we're getting if you're going to repeal it. And we don't ask you to diddle with it either. But what we're talking about now is we got around to where we're talking about how we're going to diddle with it, not how we're going to repeal it and reimburse
right.
it.
Question for anybody that has an answer. How many states, maybe somebody else has got a solution that we don't have here. How many states have repealed this? Does anyone know?
How many states have in the first place?
How many have in the first place?
And that then followed my research.
I think, Mr. Chairman, that everybody here that's been in business is in agreement that this is one of the first ones to go. But, you know, we're borrowing money against what we're going to make just to run the place, and we're not knocking all these things out of there every time we turn around. So we're going to knock a tax off and borrow against what we're going to get some other time. Well, we're going to find that all of a sudden we're going to be looking at an empty sock again and wondering, where did it all go? Where did you spend the $900 million? You know, where did you spend the $5 billion? Or where did you spend the $10 billion? I'm in agreement 100% with the repeal of the tax. I know, and the people in my district would like to have it removed, but we have to find some place we're going to get the money back and without putting additional tax burdens on the individuals. And when you do that, I'm with you. When you do that, I'm not.
In the interest of time, I'd like to pass this thing out today. It looks like we're not making much progress, but I've learned a lot. I suppose, Joe, you'd like to play with it in your community and regional affairs committee a little more. I'll give you a new pass to get it to you.
You
maybe
have to
not get crucified.
You have to get 3 votes to get out of here, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure you have the 3 votes yet.
I don't see the right looks in all folks' eyes.
I don't think you have them, but. Perhaps we could. Maybe we ought to.
Well, we'll find out if you're ready to entertain a motion.
Yeah, if you're ready to entertain a motion,
I'm ready to entertain a motion.
All sorts of motions. I move that we move and ask unanimous consent that we pass the bill out as it is on individual regulations.
What bill are you talking
about? The original Senate Bill 7?
Senate Bill.
Yeah, I object.
7.
I object.
Anybody else object?
Yeah, I just call for the question here. Well, just call for the question, that's all.
It won't do us any good. We've got to see it in community and regional affairs anyway. So
you'd rather see it die there?
Oh, I don't care. And I think we should give it to Senator Orsini and let him explain how he didn't get out of his committee.
We're out of here.
All
right. I would call for the question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator.
That's why I'm asking for the question. The motion in front of the body.
There's a motion.
Unless Senator Sumner would like to withdraw his motion. Maybe we can find something out between now and next week or next meeting.
I would suggest that Proposal A might be better. Of course, of action.
If it gets to your committee, it's going to go out here at all, it's going to your committee.
Well,
but then
why don't we think it over
We have a motion on the floor, Mr. Chairman.
Well, until such time as we can go from there.
I think you can take a vote. I think it's going to give you the same thing.
All right. Okay. How many in favor of passing it out with individual recommendation?
I'll go with individual. I got to support my motion.
He reluctantly voted for his own
motion.
Maybe we can come up with something in the meantime, Joe.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we make another motion.
I make a motion.
You're
standing
in
adjournment because it's
2:29.
You want
to go? Okay, so ordered.
I object to adjournment. If we got just one more minute. You gave us a list of governor's appointments and asked us for comments on.
Yeah, I've got them from all.
Can I excuse you, Mr. Chairman? I got to go to the other one.
Right, I'll be right behind you, Senator.
Right
here,
I'm right behind you.
You didn't vote.
All right.
Yeah, he voted.
Why don't you just
way.
Once you move the A out of it, get it over there on the other committee, we'll play with a little bit more over there. But obviously, you know, the whole thing isn't going to go all by itself. The original building is going to go all by itself.
Okay. How does that famous expression go? Not to vote is to vote.
You got to talk to your chairman.
Brad, do you want
well,
this?
Well, being a chairman for all practical purposes.
Do you want this in writing? Is that what you're saying?
I've got two of them here on a little slip of paper. I have no problems with
Joe.
You say okay, it's all right.
I'd like to talk to this guy Middleton.
What's his name? Oh, Middleton? Yeah.
I want to report back to the troop.
Yeah, I got some thoughts on it. Yeah, it'd be rather interesting. I figured you know more about it than most. It might could enlighten us a bit. I had mixed emotions on it. I considered all categories of my constituents. Since I got more churches in my district than anybody in Anchorage.
Yeah, that's okay. The liquor license doesn't say.
Sure, but I want to get a cup of coffee and I'll be all okay.
Right, okay.
They might be the first to apply, sir.
Yeah, you know, they're a lot of hypocrites. You never know how they think.
Officially, yes.
Reminds me of when Bob Brown put in his prostitution bill and I got all the mail. I had to write every minister in the district to assure him that this is Brad, not Bob. And I'm diametrically opposed. Would you clarify this to your congregation?
I was writing letters all the time saying you was really a closet one.
Yeah, my friend. I didn't need help in that way, Bill. Yeah, I got 20 times more mail than you really put in the bill.
They put a sign up in my shop that said Sharon Andrew Madden instead of director.
Yeah, Bob and I haven't figured that one out yet. Well, I got most of them here.
Maybe
the fact that you said, well, you said he hadn't put a foot in the church in 20 years. Well, I know. Lynn preaches it.
Sorrow's one of them who has been to you. Frankly, I'll minister to you separately. If you're walking the door, the people fall in.
Hi, Linda.
Good to see you. It's been a while.
I think we ought to add political functions.
I saw you very briefly in the fall here.
Political functions. I think we
ought to add
political
functions. Stop by your office
and entering committee meeting with entering
for the profit of the country.
That's my card for you.
What Senator Crockett, would you be amenable to expanding your bill to include political functions?
No, I wouldn't. We Democrats don't drink about it.
I know, but you could sell to Republicans.
They're such cheapskates.
That's why we haven't got any money on
that. Is that what I shifted? Because I'm a cheapskate. I just found out.
You just lost the vote, Crock.
Hey, Bill and I found that Republicans won't pay.
They never do.
Well, that is what I hear. I hear you make them pay and pay and pay.
Yeah, I said
that. Keep the animals in the zoo. Right?
Well, I tell you, since we've got a long way to go and a lot of people testifying this morning, maybe we better get going. Incidentally, SB 741, which again we thought we might pick up on the last time. The Department of Revenue and Legislative Affairs was working on something we thought would satisfy more than the last two versions did, didn't quite get out, so we had to delay that again.
Can we assume we've already taken it up for the last time?
I think I'd like to. So we'll start with our Senate Bill 143. The meeting will come to order. Poland, would you prefer to start out with any comments?
Mr. Chairman, there were several people down here. They're here yesterday. They're supposed to be here at 9 o'clock this morning.
We are.
We might see about Janice, see if we can get some more chairs if needed. think we probably will. At least a couple more.
And Mr. Chairman, I introduced this bill by request of a couple of accountants in my hometown. But I think that probably the people that support the bill could speak to all the facets of it better than I could.
Right. Okay. Well, we have testifying on this bill. Maybe we should start with the latest person. Would Marjorie Thomas here?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Vince Vitale. She's currently testifying in front of the House. They're still continuing their hearing, so she's giving her explanation right now. She'll be by a little bit.
Right.
If you wish, I can start off. That's all right. If you want, I can start us off as the first witness.
Is that all right with everybody else? Okay. Glenda will say the best of last.
Is there a... Shall I just sit here? Can I hear it all
yes. Right? I want to move that microphone a little closer. Could you identify yourself?
Yes. My name is Vincent Vitale. I'm an attorney from Anchorage, and I've been working with the members of the Alaska Society of Independent Accountants on this proposal. We've been really working on it since about October. We've reviewed both your bill and the equivalent bill in the House, and the House bill is a little more detailed. It would be our hope that whatever bills come out of the two committees, that they would be substantially similar so they can avoid the necessity of a conference committee later. There's some technical matters that we spoke about in the other House that I'll get to. First, since no matters have been brought to this committee's attention, I'd like to explain the current setup and what the bill is designed to accomplish. With regard to accountants, at the moment, there are basically three classes of accountants. There's certified public accountants who take the Certified Public Accountants Examination, which is a nationwide test, which is given under the auspices of the Board of Accountancy. There's a second group known as public accountants, or licensed public accountants, which consists of basically 11 people who were grandfathered in some years ago, some of whom have retired, so we're not sure how many are active, but only those 11 people who were grandfathered in are currently licensed under that second category. Then there's a third group, which consists of everybody else who wants to refer to themselves as a bookkeeper, tax preparer, tax return service, and the like. They're not regulated at all. The public accountants who are people who want to take the public accountant exam, in effect, take the CPA exam, and the only real difference is their educational background. Those that wish to sit and for the CPA exam and become CPAs are more highly educated. They're required to take 60 units of college work in addition to passing the exam, although there's no requirement that the 60 units have anything to do with accounts or their economics. This bill is designed to change the examination that people take to become public accountants, to set up a second examination so that the second class of accountants will have some practicality. Currently, CPAs can do every kind of accounting function, including what I think would be described as the highest or most difficult or the most responsible, that is the attest function. That function permits an accountant to review the books, the ledgers, review the inventory, and to take a thorough audit of a business, for instance, and then to issue a formal opinion as to the status of that business. I'm stating it very simply now because when I speak of those details, I'm speaking as a layman. Theoretically, the public accountant under the current setup can do the same thing. In effect, they really don't. Those that want to take the public accountant's exam and change the test are not willing or are not interested in performing this higher service, the attest function. The people that wish to take the licensed accountant's exam serve primarily small businessmen, individuals who have a moderate or better income, small partnerships, and people other than the large commercial concerns. The needs of those clients are different than many of the clients served by CPAs. There's a substantial difference in the cost of the service which is provided by the CPA compared to what's charged by the licensed accountant. We feel that the examination promulgated by the National Society of Public Accountants is sufficient to guarantee to the public that those people who are licensed public accountants can do those jobs that they're now authorized to do. and there'll be testimony from accountants, both pro and con, as to the usefulness of the exam. I'm not really qualified to state. I've seen the exam, but to me it looked like a bunch of numbers. I have enough trouble with my checkbook, much less anything more complicated. The other requirement of the bill, which doesn't currently exist, is a continuing education requirement. In effect, we're asking that once someone is licensed, to guarantee their continued proficiency, to be required to take 60 hours of continuing education of some kind, either approved by the National Society of Public Accountants or other forms approved by the Board of Accountancy. We feel it's important because even though that may not guarantee that someone is really listening to their lectures or that they're really paying attention, it's at least a step in the right direction to ensure that once somebody gets licensed, they don't sit on their laurels. There's no way of guaranteeing that once somebody becomes a professional that they're going to continue that level of performance. It certainly doesn't happen with lawyers, which is the profession I'm most familiar with, and I would bet it's true in most other specialties. We don't view that as something that's particularly controversial. I'm not going to deal too much with the day-to-day functioning of accountants because there are accountants here that can do that. Hopefully before this particular hearing is over, I can go over some specific technical language in the bill, but I won't do that now until the purpose has been made more clear. And hopefully we'll be able to get back on record to do that.
Mr. Chairman, let me ask you one question right now.
Sure.
You said that after they take this exam, one of the requirements would be to go and take 60 units. Is that what you said?
No, not 60, not 60 semester hour type units. I mean, literally 60 minute hours over a period of 2 years. Otherwise, you'd be equivalent to getting an AA every 2 years.
Mr. Chairman, what happens now when an accountant takes a CPA exam and with no desire to become a CPA and naturally fails the exam? What?
Nothing. I mean, an accountant, someone...
Well, why does he have to take it at all?
Well, to become a certified public accountant, you go through the steps of the statute. The reason you would want to become a certified public accountant is because you would be able to do work that you otherwise wouldn't be able to attract. That is, many financial institutions require that those people preparing financial statements and audits be qualified to do so. So that if you're not either a certified public accountant or licensed under some other scheme, then those people who rely on your work won't accept it because they have no guarantee that you know what you're doing.
Yeah, but going back to the bookkeeper, are you saying then that at present there is no exam they have to take?
Nothing. No. Literally, if you want to hold yourself out as a bookkeeper, you can send down to Juneau, get your business license for $25. Make sure that you don't hold yourself out to be an accountant because the statute prohibits that, and that's it. Frankly, this bill doesn't address that particular problem. It just sets up a second category of people and in effect tells the consumer of services, here are two categories of people that we, the state, have certified to be proficient to a certain level. If you want to go to somebody else, you can. That's up to you. Because there's no way the state can protect people from themselves.
You view this as a threat to the CPAs in any...
I think that the CPAs probably view it as an economic threat, but I don't think, in fact, it really is, because the CPAs now do work that licensed public accountants don't want to do, and further, aren't qualified to do. And in effect, licensed public accountants service people that CPAs don't really need as clients. The threat might come to CPAs economically in that, let's say a financial institution says, I want a financial statement. Not a full-scale audit, but a financial statement. I'll only accept one from a CPA. It's because there's no other person that the financial institution can look to. They have to assure some minimal level of performance. As a practical matter, both the CPA and those who would qualify under our scheme are qualified to do that. But the financial institution can't rely on that because they have no way of knowing. They have to look to the label that somebody has and hope that it's accurate. The other reason for this, and perhaps this is a concern of CPAs, is that it would prevent some clients from having to go from the licensed public accountant to the CPA for work when they're both qualified, because now that the licensed accountant would be certified to be having met a certain level of competence. But I think the CPAs are very, no doubt in my mind, are very strongly opposed to it.
I've noticed that.
That's right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have any problem with the licensing or the test that they give. We've given it a couple of times in the new section. I wonder how many other professions are required to continue their education after being licensed. such as 60 hours of
teachers.
What, every 2 years? The doctors have to do it, dentists, nurses,
teachers.
Like teachers.
Teachers.
CPAs have to have they have a continuing education requirement now, but it's not set out in the statute so specifically. The discretion is vested with the Board of Accountancy to set up regulations to govern that, and I guess they haven't been finalized yet.
Well, what is the thrust of the bill? I mean, why?
It's a simple bill. There's a great deal of, surprisingly, a great deal of emotion attached to it, but the thrust of the bill is to give a second examination to in effect, make public accountants the group that truly exists. It just changes the test.
Every 2 years, isn't it?
Yes, the 60 hours would be every 2 years.
Senator Ray,
and after he gets done with this, does he take the test again?
No. He would not have to take the exam again. The continuing education would have to be approved by the board, although this bill doesn't state it out quite as clearly as the House bill did. But the 60 hours would have to be...
Continuing education could be what? Reading pamphlets and books and stuff?
No, it's more formalized than that. Generally, seminars, those are the ones I'm most familiar with. They would either be sponsored by the Internal Revenue Service in some instances, the National Society of Public Accountants has its own training program, and presumably the certified public accountants also have training programs that can be used by both groups in some areas. And those groups that sponsor it, say the NSPA, would have to certify that Mr. John Doe did in fact come for this 8 hours, which was held on January 2nd and 3rd. Now, there's no guarantee that John Doe, who went, would actually be listening and paying attention, but he'd have to at least show that he showed up. Hopefully some of what was said would sink in. There's no guarantee. It's an act of faith, but at least it's a step in the right direction.
That's the legislature's an act of faith, too.
All right, Senator, in just a minute, maybe Sharon Andrew, the director of occupational license, might have something to expand on.
Well, I was just going to say, in answer to Senator Ray's question, is how many other professions do this in Alaska? It is a beginning to be the coming thing. We now have a provision requiring it for medical doctors. The nursing home administrators require continuing education for licensure renewal. The dispensing opticians require it. Off the top of my head, those are the only three that I can think of that have a specific statutory requirement as well as the CPA. But it is a coming thing. We tend to doubt the validity of it, but that's perhaps a philosophical position because nobody's proven it works.
Well, but I don't think it's a statutory requirement. I think it's by regulations adopted by the board, isn't it?
In the other statutes, the continuing education is required, but the board is, I think, allowed more latitude to establish what will qualify for continuing education by regulation. And those of nursing home administrators have just addressed that in developing regulations and held hearings this week or last week on it, and then we'll be adopting some standards.
Well, I'm not opposed to continuing education. The only thing that I was thinking is an infringement on one class of people when it isn't generally accepted for other professions as well.
Well, I'm not testifying in support of it. I just thought I would answer your question as the numbers.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Vitale, are you aware of what the practice is in other states? How many states at present?
Yes.
License CPAs as well as other...
There are four states, I think. One of them may have amended their statute, I don't know, that use the NSPA exam and set up a system very much similar to what we're doing. A larger number of states are moving in the direction of excluding people from practicing as accountants unless they are, in effect, certified public accountants. Those are referring to dying class states, which means, in effect, they set up a system. Those that are in practice are grandfathered in, and then they don't have a system for anyone to become an accountant except the CPA, so that after a period of time, the practicing accountants retire and whatnot, and then there is no one left who could call themselves an accountant other than certified public accountants. There are perhaps more than a dozen states in that category, and the remaining states go all over the ballpark. I would say the states that use the NSPA exam are very much in the minority, but I think that may very well be a function of the fact that the NSPA people are much less well organized and financed than our CPAs that I'm lobbying.
Yes.
Could I maybe urge that if there's anybody here opposed to the bill, because at least for me, I don't mean to hear anything
to move out on that now because
that's fine.
In the interest of time, and since we have quite a few people, even more than we thought to testify on this bill, I think maybe we better move on to this.
Sure.
And then maybe come back to you at a time.
Fine. Fine.
Who would prefer to go?
I'll start if it's all right with Vern.
Okay. Linda Rhodes.
My name is Glenda Rhodes. I'm a past president of the Alaska Society of CPAs. I'm currently Alaska's elected member to the Council of the American Institute of CPAs, and I'm speaking for the Alaska Society. I have a statement that's prepared. It is the same statement I gave last week at the House hearings. I have copies for you if you'd like.
Why don't you just tell us simply why you told it, like it's no good or something?
I really would rather, it's not that lengthy. I would rather read it. I'm afraid I would leave something out if you don't mind. I'll try to go fast.
both are.
I'm not
the
going
letter
to.
And,
no, I won't read the letter.
Okay.
No, just my own position.
Right, okay, then.
The Alaska Society of CPAs is opposed to House Bill 149 and Senate Bill 143. The reason for licensing accountants is their test function in rendering opinions on financial statements relied upon by the general public. We feel that two different standards of competence to perform the same auditing function is not in the best interest of the public relying on the audited financial statements. The acknowledged nationwide measure of competence in the field of accounting and auditing is the uniform CPA examination. To allow anything less than that uniform examination to be the criterion for licensing of public accountants is to allow potentially substandard services to be rendered to the public. The examinations prepared by the NSPA do not test PA candidates in the scope and depth of the uniform CPA examination. Yet in the state of Alaska, a PA is allowed to perform all the same services of a CPA, including that of the test function. The December 1976 NSPA examination contained five parts: taxation, business law, theory of accounts, accounting practice, and auditing. We feel that none of the questions asked were above an intermediate accounting course level. The auditing section in particular was very short and of an elementary level. The composition and administration of the examination has been haphazard in past years. In November 1973, the NSPA administered the identical examination that they had given in May of 1973. All five parts, it was the exact same exam. I would like to introduce as evidence a letter written by Sabino Olivas in May 1974. Mr. Olivas was at that time a member of the New Mexico State Board of Accountants. New Mexico is one of the few states who use the NSPA examination. There are just a few sentences that he quotes, or that he writes about in his letter that I'd like to quote. The NSPA apparently expected us to compare the current examination with previous ones. Further, they admit they were short-staffed, could not complete the examination intended for use in November of 73, and chose to repeat the entire May 73 examination. It occurred only in the interest of expediting matters. I submit that if they cannot put out quality work, they should get out of business. Then he says, I fully agree with NSPA's statement that the repeat performance probably benefited the candidate as opposed to being unfair or detrimental to him. Indeed, that is the entire basis of my complaint. It damn well did benefit the applicant. Then he goes on to say, if one stops to consider as to why the examination is of such poor quality, with only five states using it, there is not enough income generated to justify the cost of preparing a quality product. The uniform CPA examination costs a bundle to prepare, and its cost is spread among the many thousands who take each examination. Now, since Mr. Olivas' letter was written, there have been some changes in the state statutes. According to information provided us by the American Institute of CPAs, that should be certified public accounts, there are presently only three states out of 54 total jurisdictions using this NSPA examination as a basis for licensing PAs. Those are New Mexico, Tennessee, and Vermont. Alabama and Idaho have used the examination, but recently have passed dying class legislation for PAs in their states. As the states still using the NSPA exam are not large, the total number of candidates must be very small. The examination certainly could not be considered nationwide in scope. In addition to repeating an entire examination in 1973, on the November 1974 exam, the NSPA repeated the same questions in the same exam. Question 4, Part 1 is identical to Question 7, Part 2. Currently, there are only 11 states who license public accountants and allow them to perform the test function. These are Alaska, Arizona, Georgia, Montana, New Mexico, Ohio, Oklahoma, Oregon, South Dakota, Tennessee, and Vermont. When our current Public Accountancy Act was enacted in 1960, it was intended to provide for those accountants practicing at the time by grandfathering them as public accountants if they did not care to sit for and pass the CPA examination. It was the intent of the composers of that act that the designation public accountant would become a dying class designation. Regulations were established requiring PA candidates to pass the same uniform examinations that CPA candidates must pass, since they would be holding themselves out to the public as being possessed of the same knowledge and offering the same services. It was anticipated that over the passage of time there would be fewer and fewer PAs. We believe that two designations of licensed accountants, that is CPA and PA, is confusing to the general public who do not know how to distinguish between them. However, if there is to continue to be two classes of licensed accountants in the state of Alaska allowed to perform the attest function, then surely both classes must be examined on the same basis and on the same body of knowledge.
Thank you. Glad to any questions? Okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I thought I heard Mr. Vitale say that the attest function was not wanted.
Well,
the,
under the present statutes, it's allowed, and their original bill that was submitted did not do away with their ability to perform the audit function. Now, today, they have changed their proposed legislation.
But it's still objectionable to you.
We would still be opposed to the use of this exam. Now, we would not be as opposed, for instance, to using maybe two sections of the CPA examination rather than the four. The CPA examination has four parts. We would be more amenable to, say, having them pass the theory and the practice section only and not have to take the business law and the auditing section. But this exam, we feel, is a very poor quality the exam that they're
performing.
I read that there's only 11 people affected by this
no.
bill. It says, let me read it to you. 11 public accountants are currently licensed. Each was granted licensure in 1960 under the grandfather clause. This is the 11 you talk about?
Yes, and our concern is the people who want to become licensed who aren't. Those 11 are already in.
And this says, I understand that there's been no applications in the past few years.
That's true, there haven't.
And why haven't there?
I would assume, for the most part, that if you're going to become the accountant, you might as well you're taking the exact same test that'll be graded the same way. You might as well become a CPA if you can meet the educational requirements. Because you can charge more for the same work because you've got this higher category of licensing.
Okay. Why, if somebody passes the CPA exam now, why can't they be a CPA regardless of whether they have a formal education or not?
The statute says so.
We have the lowest basic education requirements in the country.
Okay. Is your examination indicative of a person's capabilities in the field? Is that examination capable?
Yes, it's uniformly given.
Okay. And you feel that somebody passes that would be a qualified and capable CPA?
I think that we also should have some other education other than just being
so you don't
able to
think,
pass the exam.
Uh-huh. So you don't think passing the exam is the total indication that he can perform an adequate service?
I think that a college degree probably is a minimum requirement. However, this state only requires 2 years of college.
And what makes you think a college degree assures competency in the field?
It's just a more of an indication of basic knowledge in other areas. There's more to practicing accounting than just doing financial statements and performing audits. The same thing can be said of any profession.
I understand.
I'm not here to argue about the basic education requirements.
Well, I'm trying to argue if somebody passes a CPA exam and it's supposed to be indicative of somebody's capacity, why don't we make them all CPAs? Why don't we take that other part out of the statute?
Can I ask that question?
Here. You might be good with the figures and make out a financial statement, but you might not be able to spell cat. And you have to sometimes write up a long explanation in some of your
then Mr. Chairman, excuse me, that examination
financial
would be.
Statements to explain things.
Then Mr. Chairman, perhaps we should have all of the college education be legislators.
Yeah.
Some of us haven't had that opportunity, but some of us can still spell cat.
Yeah,
to understand what people are talking about.
Well, actually, you know, it has nothing to do with intelligence. Many people that don't have a college education are many times more intelligent than someone that does. So I didn't mean to start the point of controversy.
No, I'm just wondering, you know, really, because I know there are two issues here. You can't win, you're going to insult some people no matter which position you take. And so then you say, okay, to hell with that position, and go right to the core of it and say, maybe her solution is, or a solution that she suggested is those who want to be accountants take the first two or three sets of the CPA examination and not take the last part. But it seems to me that anybody that passes that CPA examination, if it's supposed to be the indicator, ought to be qualified to practice. I have a hard time with.
Mr. Chairman, I think I'd have to back up Senator Summers. My son is the chief artist for the United States Navy, and if you look in his record, you'll find that he had no formal education in art.
Mm-hmm. In a talent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't mean to make such a strong point of that, because I know many people have self-educated themselves beyond two PhDs.
And I'm sorry, that's my fault. I'm sorry. Okay.
There was one point that I wanted to ask about, and that is, it's my understanding, and maybe I'm mistaken, but that if an independent accountant wants to take the CPA exam, he takes the entire exam and can't take parts of it over again.
That's not true.
No,
I don't know.
That's not accurate.
Got that impression. They didn't testify to that effect at the other hearing this morning, but it's not. Vern is a member of the State Board of Accountants. Maybe we better go to him here.
I would too. Would you identify yourself?
My name is Vernon Johnson. I am a member of the State Court of Public Accountants.
I wonder if just to get right down to the kernel of it, you adopt regulations and as far as testing people, don't you? Do you
yes,
set
sir.
Up the is the test that you set up stricter than this one here?
The one that's proposed.
Yeah.
The regulation that in the past, since I've been on the board, which is will be 2 years in May, the examination that is used is the CPA examination for PAs. It is graded exactly the same way as for the CPAs. You pass two parts of it for PAs, the same as CPAs. You get to keep it. It's exactly the same examination, graded exactly the same way, administered the same way. And the reason that we use that examination is because by statute, PAs in Alaska are allowed to do the same thing as CPAs, the attest function. And therefore, you have to examine, if you're going to allow people to do the same thing, you have to give them the same examination. And the regulation that currently exists on the book just says that an examination will be given. On December 9, the State Board of Public Accountancy held hearings in Anchorage, public hearings, to clarify what that examination should be and actually spell it out. We did this. Working with the Department of Commerce, occupational licensing, we're revising a whole pile of regulations because they're not clear. We've had counsel from the Attorney General's office and Ms. Andrews' office and spelled it out. No one at that point in time appeared before us in opposition to that regulation, either pro or con. We had no testimony at all. I had no inkling, or no one on the board had any inkling, that these two pieces of legislation were going to be introduced. One of the questions I have is why the NSPA didn't, or the proponents of this didn't come.
As a member of the board, sir, what is your feeling about the 60 hours of continuing education?
I have no problem with the continuing education concept. I would prefer to have the state board establish what the number of hours should be by regulation, because 60 hours may be fine now, but maybe a year from now it should be more, or maybe it should be less. And if you build this type of requirement into the basic legislation, that means we have to come back to the legislature to vary from it. But as a regulatory board, with the Administrative Procedures Act, we can hold public hearings and amend this as the situation changes. I would prefer to have a different wording in this area. I have no problem with the concept.
But you do object to the National Society of Public Accountants Uniform Licensing Public Accountants Examination Advisory Service?
Yes, sir, I do. I I don't think it's a good examination. I just received some data from California. This is a publication from, or extract from the accountant, January 1977. It's the publication of the Society of California Accountants. It's an unlicensed group. And I just got this, but their basic, one of their last recommendations is to have a degree in accounting, plus passing two parts, the theory part and the practice part of the CPA examination for licensing of, they call them registered bookkeepers. There is what they're proposing. If I could get some copies made of this, I just got this morning.
I was going to ask you just that.
That would give you an idea of what's going on in some of the other states and the requirements that they have.
Thank you, Vern. I have a question here, Senator.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, is it my understanding then, Vern, that the name sticker, as far as the CPAs are concerned with in this bill, is the examination section of it? How would you word this if the examination were to fit your criteria?
I would say that the State Board of Public Accountancy would establish an exam by regulation, which they have done. First of all, Mr. Senator Hackney, the only reason accountants are regulated is because of their audit function. I think that's primary to understand. That's uniform in all states. It's not because of any other thing they do. If I as a CPA didn't perform audits, there would be no reason to license me or any other CPAs. And I'm speaking as a member of the State Board of Public Accountancy as well here. That's the only reason we're licensed. So basically, I don't think there's any need to license anyone other than CPAs. Or if you're going to have a PA class, then they should and permit them to do the attest function, then everyone should be licensed under the same way. I probably tend to agree with Senator Sumner here that let's have the same exam for everyone and only have one class.
Vince, could you hold your question until we hear from Mr. Reeves? Mr. William Reeves, could you turn the mic around a little bit there?
I think that'll pick up all right. So that'll pick up.
Yeah, it'll pick up. It picks up better. Bill, would you identify yourself? Nice seeing you after a long time.
Good to see you, sir. I'm William R. Reeves, a self-employed accountant in Anchorage. My educational qualifications are, I graduated from Durham's Business College with a Business Administration and Higher Accounting, from the University of Alaska with an associate degree in accounting and a major in accounting with 24 credits in accounting. I am a treasury card holder, and for those that are not familiar with the treasury card, that requires a 12-hour comprehensive examination on taxes only, all phases of taxes. I have accreditation in accounting from National Society of Public Accountants, which is also requires an examination. My experience, I have 2 years as a junior accountant in a CPA office, Beaver and Van Sevender, which is a firm that no longer exists in Anchorage. I have 6.5 years as auditor for the state of Alaska, 9.5 years with Internal Revenue Service, and during that time I was the state president for the National Association of Internal Revenue Employees, 9 years in my own private practice. I was the first state president for the Alaska Society of Independent Accountants. I was state director for the National Society of Public Accountants for 2 years. Now, I think we've already covered the question of passing the exam fairly well. But as far as the difference in the exam, and I think everybody will agree that is familiar with it, the CPA exam is basically designed for the college student coming right out of school and taking